I wish podcasts were more of this, like just like cut the actual part and just do the pre-roll stuff. Like that's always the most interesting.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
Welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today, I have a really special guest on the line. Dave is out sick, unfortunately, so I'm going to be holding down the fort this week and have on the show Brian Harris from VideoFruit.com. He runs a really fantastic marketing and sales website over there. VideoFruit actually started as a website that would sell explainer videos to companies, B2B, small entrepreneurial companies. Pretty quickly, Brian realized that the real power of building and maintaining and sort of getting the most out of a good email list was one of the most powerful tools that he could have in a business. So he transitioned, as you'll hear in the episode here, transitioned away from providing what was a productized service to focusing almost entirely on educating us on the value and the tactics and strategies around building an effective and good email list. So, really excited to have Brian on the show today. You guys are in for a real treat. There's tons of knowledge bombs that he drops on us here, not just about email list building and how to get the most out of your list, but just about sales and marketing and mindset around pricing and value, things like that, that a lot of us think about a lot, but maybe we're thinking to think about a little differently after this conversation. So this is going to be a little different format than we're used to on the podcast here. This is not a typical interview. Brian and I really just jump straight into the content and the meat of what we want to talk about. So without the prelude that accompany a lot of podcast episodes, let's just jump on into my conversation with Brian Harris. You have an eye for sales and an eye for email list building. Aside from what VideoFruit does as its core business, I guess that's kind of the first question. Are you still doing video work for VideoFruit, or are you doing all kind of sales coaching and business development stuff?
So that's been an interesting journey. It's an interesting study on how to pick a name or how not to pick a name as well. So I started doing explainer videos for people, created a course on it, started doing freelance work on it, then transitioned into doing like first person on camera stuff for companies like Kissmetrics, HubSpot, lead pages, those kind of folks, where I'd make videos, turning old blog posts of theirs into videos. Mm-hmm. And now, as I did that, as I created that course and started teaching people how to make explainer videos, one question I had was, how do you actually use an explainer video? Like, will an explainer video actually help you do anything with your business, or is it just a nice, shiny object to have? So I started studying marketing and trying to study how to sell my course, and eventually discovered through just doing experiments, trying to reverse engineer what people like Gary Vaynerchuk and Seth Godin and Noah Kagan and what all those folks did. And I would find out a strategy they would do, reverse engineer it, install it into my business, report the results back on the blog. And through doing that over 18 months, I discovered that the best way to sell my course was to have an email list, just not to tweet or not to Facebook or any of that crap, but to just have a list of people that trust me, like me, and when I send an email, will buy from me. So that's kind of led me down an interesting path of VideoFruit, kind of starting as a company that did video, made video, did freelance stuff, had a course about video, to now more of a online marketing company that really focuses on creating apps and online classes to help people grow their email list. And I don't know where it'll go from here. I mean, I'll probably talk about other topics. We were talking earlier about the blog post I wrote recapping the launch I just had of my new course called Get 10,000 Subscribers. That blog post has done really well, so that's a potential course I could make out of that and kind of going in depth on launching digital products. So I don't know. I don't know where it'll go for the next year or two. I'll focus heavily on email list building and creating. I got an app I'm working on that's launched called List Goal, listgoal.com, that'll help you coach you through building your list and help you kind of keep that top of mind and build the habit of working on that every day, give you one small task to do it, and then a big flagship course called Get 10,000 Subscribers. And the blog is just a way to get consistent traffic to that, to grow my list. So when I do have a paid thing I want to sell, when I open up class for the Get 10,000 Subscribers course, which is in the spring and the fall, I'll have a group of people sitting there waiting to buy it from me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the consensus I hear from almost everyone is, you know, like we were talking about before, your email list is kind of the most valuable thing you can have in business. And I think it applies to most businesses, even, you know, even Podcast Motor, my business. If I have, you know, my core business offering, which is a product I service, and have 10,000 people on my list, but only 100 of them are you know, users of the service, you know, send out some emails about it and offer, you know, special incentives or whatever. You're going to get people driving in and creating revenue from that in sales, as opposed to not. But do you think that a good email list is the most valuable or very valuable to almost every business?
I don't know where it is on the list of importance. It's in the top. It's incredibly important. Yes.
Yeah. Even to, I mean, I know you're kind of main.
If you have an incredibly good email list and your product sucks, well, that's great. Like, you have a list, but you have a crappy product. So there's other variables involved, but a list is the best sales tool I've ever seen. So yeah. I've been in sales for 15 years, a lot of direct B2B stuff, B2C stuff. An email list is the single best way to sell something I've ever seen because it flips the dynamic of the sales process. So a normal sales process is, okay, I have this product task service business where I help people engineer and grow their podcast and do all the post-production and everything. So I go out, I make a list of 100 people that would be dream clients. I start pitching them. I close 10 of the 100 and I've started my business. With an email list, if you had an email list of 10,000 people, those people have come to you. You haven't gone to them and tried to pitch them. They've come to you and trusted you because you've taught them interesting information. You've given them valuable stuff to help them grow their podcast. And now every now and then, a couple of times, you'll send an email out and say, hey, I have two openings for new clients where I'll help you grow your podcast. Those are people that have already put their trust in you, already know you, you've built a relationship with them. And it's like selling something to your next door neighbor versus selling something to someone across town you've never met before. Your next door neighbor knows you. There's a relationship there and there's a personal connection versus somebody you've never met before who's trying to cold pitch. You can do that. Like, and I've done that. It's just way harder.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
so,
I mean,
like, even if you have a product ass thing that's only relevant to 100 people on your list, like, you have 100 people and those are not even close to being the same as 100 cold prospects. Those are 100 people that are warm, that read your stuff, that like you, that know who what your name is. And I can't tell you how many freelancing opportunities I've gotten out of Video Fruit. Where that's not the main focus at all. Like, I never heard they talk about it, but people approach me, you know, fairly regularly wanting me to do stuff for them. And a lot of times they're people that are starting. Sometimes every now and then you'll get somebody a couple times a month, some really high-end people that want to do stuff. And those have been people I've never been able to reach otherwise. Those are people that now they've seen what I've done. They've seen the results of what I've done and what I've taught and students and that kind of thing. And they know, you know, I'm halfway decent at what I'm doing. So they want to hire somebody good to work with. So they'll approach me with that. So I think there's no substitute for an engaged email list that's built on you helping people reach their goals. Like Zig Ziglar, the old Zig Ziglar quote, you help enough people get what they want and you'll get what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's huge. That's huge. It's it should be a goal of everyone, I think, is to build a good list. So speaking of the, you know, building a list of 100, you know, 100 ideal clients, I have to say, and we were talking about this before we recorded, you know, that was my approach to start Podcast Motor, and it came right from one of your blog posts. We'll link to it in the show notes. But, you know, the essence of it is, you know, to start a productized service or any kind of service business, go read an in-depth article on something that really interests you. Figure out how to do whatever it is they're talking about, and then go create a list of the people that would be your ideal customers and pitch them either with the service already done, if you can, like you did for Video Fruit, or just kind of cold email them and offer them a way to get in the door. So this is kind of off topic. You use Infusionsoft for email marketing, email management?
I do.
Why? I don't use Infusionsoft. I use Drip, and I can't wait until you guys integrate Drip with Listgoal. I think it's going to be great. I know you're working on it.
Working on it this week.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait because I installed Listgoal, and I was like, oh, where is Drip in here? But I mean, Drip's a cool tool because it seems to me a good bridge between sort of Aweber or GetResponse and something like Infusionsoft, which is like it just seems very complex. I mean, I hear people talking about going to Infusionsoft training and, you know, getting certified using Infusionsoft. Is it really that hard? And is it worth it from your perspective?
Is it that hard? No, they've done a terrible job of marketing themselves and not curing that misconception.
No, interesting.
So if an email list is the most valuable thing you have in your business, why does everybody choose the cheapest option to manage it? I don't understand. Like, why on earth would you ever use Aweber if you have 5,000 or more subscribers and you're doing more than $100,000 a year from your list? Like, it beats me why people don't spend money on their list. It's the most important thing. Do it right. Like, I like what Rob's doing. I like what Nathan's doing. They're both building independent email service providers. Just personally, so I've used MailChimp, I've used Entreport, and now I'm using Infusionsoft. And I didn't really know what I wanted, what I needed. You know, when people get to choose their email service provider, it takes forever because there's so many variables, and it's really just harder to make a decision on that. So I've just like made decisions and changed my mind, and now I'm with what I need. So for me, there's a couple variables in it. One, has the thing been around a while? I have made decisions before to choose a product because it's cheaper and it's only been around for a year or two and it's just not mature enough yet. Like I used a particular checkout program to launch my course last month and I really like it. I like a lot of things about it, but it's only been around for about a year and there's just things it doesn't do well yet. Like it just needs time to develop. That's one of Entreport's faults is that Infusionsoft has just been around a long time. They've had way more money invested in them. They have way more people working there and the product's just better. So with my most valuable thing, like you're buying, like we're about to have a kid. So like, would you just go buy the $20 car seat from Goodwill?
Yeah,
or would you like go spend $400 and make sure your kid doesn't die?
Yeah.
Like I'm not comparing my email list to my kid, but as far as importance level, if something's really important to you, spend money on it. Don't buy the cheapest option and do it right. Now I'm a frugal guy, so there's plenty of things I don't spend money on or I'm cheap on, but that's probably the one thing I just don't care what it costs. Because I know my list will produce income, and it does, and I'm willing to spend what I need to get the best thing. And as far as I've seen in testing those three, Infusionsoft is the best currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, it definitely seems to be the most robust.
Use it? Yeah, yeah. Like, do you have to figure out how to use it? Yeah, but I mean, you spend a week in it, and you're fine. You're good to go.
Okay, interesting, interesting. What do you think is like the, I don't want to say minimum viable amount for a list? But if you know, say you're starting out a list, you got couple hundred people on it. When do you think a list really gets to where you can start extracting a lot of value from it and start seeing a lot of results? I mean, is it right away? Is it at 100 people or is it at 5,000?
It just depends on what your goal is. Like if your goal is to sell a product, I usually advise people if you're starting from scratch to wait till you get 1,000 subscribers. There's plenty of exceptions to that. I know one girl who's built a list of 650 subscribers, incredibly niche service, incredibly niche topic right from the start, no discovery time needed. And she did a launch and did over $40,000. You know, other people I've known that had a list of 3,000, they did a launch and did $20,000. My first launch was to a list of 6,500 and it did $25,000. I just finished a launch to right at 14,000 people and it did $234,000 or 220, depending on how you count. So like you can launch at any point along the way. I generally advise, like in my course I teach, to wait till you get to 1,000 to start validating and building your product. If you're coming in and you've been writing blog posts for 5 years and you have 100,000 visitors and you've never focused on email, so you have no email list, well, then do a couple of things, grow your list really quick and get a freaking product out there. Like quit procrastinating. So it just depends on where you're coming from. There's quite a few variables. If you don't have a product-based business, you have an ad-based business, like email your content out. Like there's plenty of sports blogs and fitness blogs and nutrition blogs that have volume-based businesses where they're getting 2 million plus uniques a month. Like my blog will never be that big. They have completely different markets, completely different models, but they're just not emailing their content to their subscribers. So they have a group of people who said, yeah, please tell me about your thing. But then when they produce new things, they don't tell them about it. So like you would just instantly increase ad revenue and affiliate revenue by just telling the people that want to know about you when you have stuff that they would be interested in. So yeah, start, if you build a list, you can start generating more traffic to your blog immediately just by emailing when you have new stuff. If you're mm-hmm. talking about creating product, I generally try to wait to 1,000 and then I go through some particular validation techniques to make sure my audience actually wants what I'm going to build before I build it and then launch it to that list.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Speaking of the course that you just launched and amazing results from it, but you know, you talked about the checkout sort of software package that you used, not having exact, or, you know, sort of being new and not having some things in it. Was there anything about launching the course that you'd do different if you had it to do over again?
Oh yeah. I got a long list.
You're going to, well, that's a good lesson though. That's the only way you learn is screwing stuff up, right?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, the course did really well. It wasn't because I had some ingenious launch technique. There were some things I did that were smart, because people told me to do them, not because I'm a really intelligent person. But I think one of the key takeaways, so I finished the course, I finished creating the course on April 27th, if I had my dates right, and that was a Monday. You can check me on that. I launched the course on April 28th. So the launch and everything was very quick, very on the fly. So there's a lot of lessons I learned from that. I mean, there's some things I did that were really good. There were some things that I did that I regret and I wish I would do different next time, and I will. But I mean, the key is just to ship, man. Like, get your stuff out there and then tweak it on the next go around. Like one exact, to give you a non-fluff answer, one thing I'll do next time is have an aggressive track and a non-aggressive track. So I basically took my whole list and emailed them all, every single email, and was probably on the aggressiveness scale a 6 to 7 out of 10 on, like, not the tone of the email, but just the amount of email. I emailed almost every day. On opening day, I emailed 2 to 3 times. On closing day, I emailed 3 times. Had an extension in email twice. So I would probably segment people based on their interest level. So have some downloadables that if they click those, then I put them in an aggressive track and go all out on those folks. And the people that haven't, people that just aren't ready to buy, which you can get in gray territory there. But the people that I have determined aren't super interested in it, put them down a less aggressive track that have less emails in it.
Yeah.
That's one takeaway. There's plenty of others though.
Yeah, I saw you used Zippy courses, and I applaud you for going with the kind of the complete package. I mean, when I launch my podcasting course, that's what I'm going to do is just use Zippy courses, and there's no, or minimal at least, dicking around with, you know, this plugin and hiring a developer to plug that into this and use that in WordPress and just go with the complete package. I think that's a smart move. Less stuff to screw up, right?
Yeah, that'd be a lesson too. I actually didn't use Zippy courses.
Oh, you didn't?
I talked about it in the course, and that was one of the lessons of. I had a really particular way I wanted my course, which I don't know if that was a good thing or bad thing. I'm probably still on the edge about that. Like, so there's two different types of course. There are reference courses. So that would be something where, like, my buddy Joseph Michael has a course called Learn Scrivener Fast, and you buy his course, and it teaches you how to use a really niche software product called Scrivener, and you can kind of just jump around. So if you want to learn how to use it for a blogger, you can go pick a few little tutorials, and if you want to go learn how to use it with Evernote, you can kind of run through those tutorials and go to the first one, go to the sixth one. With my course, I wanted a specific path course. So I wanted to walk somebody from 0 subscribers to 10,000 subscribers. I don't want you to jump from module 1 to module 4. The goal of the course isn't to teach you information. Like, you'll learn. It's like 30% teaching, 70% coaching. And part of coaching is not overwhelming people with a million things to do and not giving people 20 different paths to follow and not letting people walk down their own path, but showing them the path, agreeing to the path, committing to the path, and executing the path. So I wanted to have a particular type of course. And at the time, Zippy Courses is newer. It's been around for a year, year and a half. I recommend it to people. But at the time, I had never tried it before. And I think even now it won't do some of the things that I was, for whatever reason, really gung-ho about doing. So I created this hodgepodge using Infusionsoft, WordPress, and a plugin called iMember 360 so I could gate each lesson. So you have to read a lesson, watch the video, complete the assignment, submit the assignment, and then you can move to the next lesson. You can't just read it, say, oh, that's a cool thing, and then go to the next one, because that's not the point of the course.
Sure.
The point of the course is to get you 10,000 subscribers, not teach you strategies to get to 10,000 subscribers. It's to get you there. And part of that is you executing. So there's a lot of accountability built into it. And at the time, it just wasn't at the point where it could do all that. It's getting a whole lot better. And I would recommend it to 99% of people that are creating their first course not to do what I did, but just go buy Zippy courses and do it. It makes it so much easier.
Yeah. I mean, I read a lot about, you know, people that, you know, this didn't work with that, and that plugin had an update that screwed up another part of their integration or something. I know Adam Clark did his podcasting course a few months ago, and I mean, it just wouldn't let people log in for like 3 days. And yeah. So I can just imagine sweating for 3 days waiting for a developer on what could be like a side project WordPress plugin to submit a patch to it, and just sitting there with all, you know, 500 people that paid you $200, you know, just being pissed at you for a few days. It would be the worst thing ever. And I know Derek is a top-notch guy, and that's a great-looking product.
Absolutely. And that's key when you're picking software stuff. That's why I generally side with stuff that's been around a while, has a big team around it, has had millions of dollars put into it, has a big marketplace. And the key for me, like with picking Infusionsoft specifically and with any core stuff, will be, does it have a lot of third-party developers that know how to work with it? So like Entreport, almost non-existent. Like, they have a list and there's like 10. Like, that's it. Infusionsoft, I mean, there's hundreds of them. Like, I found a guy immediately that charged $35 an hour, had worked for Infusionsoft for 2 years, and could work on stuff immediately. And within just asking a few people, I had a bunch of recommendations of people. So I know if my main guy, Eric, gets booked up and he can't do my thing, there's three other people I could call, and they could jump on it immediately. And Entreport just didn't have that ecosystem. There's no third-party marketplace. So anytime I'm marrying myself to software, like, I want to know how big is it, how much money has been put into it, what kind of support do they have, and what kind of third-party marketplace and third-party developers are available for it. And if a lot of those questions are, well, we're looking at that in the future, then it's just not – it's not the right pick for me, at least, currently. I want to make sure when I get married that it's a good relationship and it's not me being their beta customer on software like that, because there's just so many variables in software that can get screwed up and it can really jack up your business.
Yeah, I mean, they're tools for your business, and for, you know, those of us who make money on online business, the software tool is, they're all the most important tools that you can use, and yeah, directly impact your business so much. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Hey, so let me ask you a question. So you have a decent list. What do you think, what do you see people in your coaching that have, you know, a good sized list? What's the biggest kind of mistake they make aside from not emailing people enough? What do you think people get wrong once they've gotten a decent list going?
Hmm.
Or is that not a problem if you got a decent sized list? Are they all pretty well taken care of?
No, there's. Yeah, I mean, I got to be careful, and this is something that I probably struggle with, is trying to project my expectations on other people, and say, you know, you could, like, you have a list of 200,000 people, and you're selling a $7 product. Why?
You
did $70,000 on your launch. Great. You could have done $700,000 on your launch. But maybe that person is completely fine with that's what they want to do. And that's the cool thing about what we do. You can do things the way you want. Like, I don't have to be Derek Halpern. I don't have to be Ramit. I like a lot of the stuff they do. There's some things I might want to do different. And that's cool. Like, I don't always have to optimize for money, for conversion. I can optimize for my happiness. And so, like, I got to be careful on judging other people. But a few things that come to mind. When somebody, like, if somebody really wanted to sell their product, I've seen several people lately that have good sized lists, bigger lists than me, but they're just not all that great with selling, honestly. You know, so the way you sell a product, like, let's take, for example, if you're selling marriage counseling, like, nobody wakes up in the morning thinking, man, I really want to go to marriage counseling today. Like, there's a social stigma attached with marriage counseling. Like, oh, you go to marriage counseling? What's wrong with y'all? Like, what's the problem y'all have? Y'all must be, we got to get divorced. No, like, If you want to have a better marriage, most any honest married person I know would say a marriage counselor would help them have a better marriage. But the problem with marriage counselors are they sell marriage counseling, which is something people don't want. What they do want is to be able to communicate better with their wife, to not get in a fight when they bring up particular topics, to be able to give suggestions to their partner to help them improve without the person taking it personally and getting offended. They want to have better sex. They want to not fight about that. They want to be able to have a budget and talk about money and be on the same page about that, where they're not fighting about that. Every married person wants that. But marriage counselors don't sell that. They sell marriage counseling. Yeah. But if a marriage counselor comes up to you and says, hey, Brian, I have one technique for you that will help you communicate to your wife. It's called reflective listening. So next time your wife tells you something and you kind of disagree with it and you want to correct her on it, instead of doing that, just absorb what she's saying and repeat it back to her. So say, so what you mean by that is, and then repeat what she just said to give her the affirmation of what she just said, that you've acknowledged that, and then use this little technique to give her a nudge in the other direction, but do it without sounding like you're her coach, because you're not her freaking coach, you're her partner. So that's one little technique. So I have a class I do once a month where you can come in and I'll teach you these 35 different techniques that'll help you have better sex, help you be on the same page about money, help you communicate with your partner better, and your chance of divorce goes from 1 in 4 to 1 in 10,000. Do you want to be a part of that? Like, yeah. Tell me where to sign up and how much I have to pay. Yeah. Like, I'll take that. But if you came up with the other pitch, which is, hey, Brian, I have 3 marriage counseling spots open. You want to join?
Right, yeah.
Not really. No, I have a podcast service I offer. I'll edit your podcast for you. That's all right. Hey, Brian, what I can do is save you 50 hours a week of having to go in and freaking spend your time in Audible, spend your time in Audacity, editing crap, uploading stuff, wrangling show notes, all that stuff. Like, that's interesting. Podcast service, that's all right, whatever. Yeah. So I see a lot of people selling their product and not selling the pain that it solves. And that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's creating the value proposition 101, right? This is your problem. This is how it's going to solve it. And this is why it's important and worth whatever the cost is. Yeah.
And you can do that through, depending on what you're selling and how you're selling it, you can do that through an email sequence when you're in your launching process, and do that really well, where it walks them through a framework of presenting the problem to them. So email number one, or video number one, or YouTube video number one, whatever, is presenting the problem. Email number two is agitating that problem. So you present the problem of, hey, every time you talk about money, you fight with your spouse. And then in email number two, and you tell a story about that, and you kind of use words and phrases that your exact customers have used to describe that. So when they read that, it's like you're reading their mail and you're talking exactly to them. And then email number two, you agitate that. So you don't solve it yet. You don't give them solutions to it, but you give them the five mistakes that you make when you're trying to talk about money. So number one, you sit down with your wife and you try to make her go through a four-hour budget meeting where you have 72 spreadsheets and you try to get her to do it. And she could give a crap about that. So she's angry at you because she's missing watching Desperate Housewives, and she's bored to tears because she didn't care about any of that stuff. So don't do that. Mistake number two. And then you go to mistake number two, mistake number three, mistake number four. So you agitate that problem by telling them what not to do. And then email number three, you solve the problem. So you give them one little quick takeaway, one little quick exercise they can do so they can get a taste of how you can help them do that. So you give them your budget meeting should be 3 minutes long. It should all fit on one page, and you should talk for less than 1 minute, and your spouse should talk for the other 2 minutes. And you give them a specific exercise they can go through to solve one of their problems. And then you launch to them and say, hey, that's one of the solutions. I have 45 other solutions that can help you. And then you're selling the solution to the problem of having a lack of communication, the sex sucks, the communication sucks, the money sucks, and you're selling them solutions to all that. Then you're positioned completely different. And it's not even about positioning. It's about, like, I want somebody to help me edit my podcast. I want marriage counseling on some level. It's just the problem is it's like number 47 on my list of things to do, and I'm just never going to get that far down. So by talking about the pains, by amplifying that, by agitating that, and give me a quick solution to it, you've raised it from number 47 to number one. And yeah, Now I'm ready to solve it, because it's now an emotional attachment to it. And it's not just this thing I know I need to do that I've been procrastinating on. It's now this thing I need to do, I have to do. And this guy's got the magic formula to fix it for me. So, like, I'm dumb not to do it.
Right. Oh, man, that's solid gold. Absolutely. I mean, that's even I've been selling for 10 years and I have a hard time with doing that effectively a lot of times. That's something huge just to keep in mind. And it applies to everything too. I mean, it applies to your relationship with people. It applies to selling stuff. It applies to just marketing, just getting your word out there and how you position what you're talking about as adding value in whatever way that you do it. So you have a background in sales. Did you go through any sort of specific sort of training on marketing and coming up with ideas like that?
I wish people would have put me through training, but no, it's just been 15 years of being really dumb, not making a lot of money, and knocking on a whole lot of doors. There was one course I went through lately that I would definitely recommend. It's probably one of the best courses I've ever been through, and it's Yes Engines by Derek Halpern. And it goes through some of that model of pain agitate. So he calls it, the conflict, the quest, and the victory. And that kind of the pre-launch state. And it's just a really good course. If you have a digital product and you want to launch it, go read my blog post that I just put up, blog.videofruit.com, and go buy his course. It's like a $2,000 course, but if you ever sell anything online, it'll 10x the return on that. A friend gave it to me. So a friend gave it to me like the day I was going to launch. He's like, hey, I know you don't have a lot of time to do your launch, so just do what Derek's doing. And I pretty much, at least for the pre-launch stuff, I followed his framework. And like after email number two, I had so many replies and so much reaction, I like emailed Derek and told him to send me a link so I could pay for it. Like it was just really, really good. So there's a lot of sales training out there. It just, like, I would try to find something that's specific to what you're doing. So if you're selling digital products, go chase after Derek. If you're selling like apps and stuff, I would go listen to Rob Walling. The more specific you can get, the better. There are a lot of general principle books out there. If you're doing a lot of B2B stuff, go read The Ultimate Sales Machine. And maybe that guy has a course.
That's a great book. Yeah.
But that's basically a course in a book form. It's incredibly detailed and good. I just read all the time and stuff. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So sort of related, I know you and Noah Kagan are good buddies, and you kind of got your start with doing some stuff with him. What's that relationship like, and what have you really learned from him that you still carry on?
Yeah, the number one lesson I've learned from Noah is validate what you do before you do it. There's a lot of lessons. That's the one that sticks out the most. So most of the time, like any business I'd ever started, from the one when I was in 7 years old, seven baseball cards out of our window in our subdivision. Like everything started with, oh, that's a cool idea. I need to do that. And then you go do that, which mm-hmm. sounds perfectly logical, but it's completely backwards. You find a, like most people find a product, they have an idea for a product, and then they go try to find a market for that product. So the better way to do it is to find a market and then give them the product they want. So validate what you're doing before you do it. So you can still have cool ideas like, hey, here's a cool app idea. But before you go build it, make sure people will pay money for it. And you can do that. There's several measures. There's several different ways you can do that. If you have an email list, it makes it a lot easier. That's one of the greatest reasons to build a list, is because you just ask people what they want, build it for them, and sell it to them. Like, very simple model. If you don't have a list, you can build a list. But you can also, like, if you're what's an example. If you're a dog trainer, you want to build a dog training course. Like, go to a dog training forum and, you know, make a really in-depth dog training video. Like, spend, you know, an afternoon and shoot a little video and post it on there and tell people, hey, I'm thinking about creating a course for this. Would you be interested in it? And if you can get three people to PayPal you $29 or $129 or whatever price point you want to come up with for it, then go build the course. But make sure people want what you want before you build it. Don't assume they want it.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I mean, I think talking about finding a market and finding a problem before you do anything, I've seen that with Podcast Motor, with my podcast service. I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's easy to get customers, but I have people coming to me unsolicited saying, hey, I heard about your service. I'd love to work with you. And that's just a dream, man. I mean, I don't run into that any other time in my, you know, selling career. It's just when you find, you know, Rob calls it product market fit. When you find the thing that solves the problem that people know they have, man, you're gravy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's awesome. Nice. Nice. So, you know, you knocked the course out of the park initially, at least, right? What about, you know, things that hadn't gone so well for you and what you learned from it? What about some low points that, you know, you're willing to talk about and kind of things you learned from them and how they change your perspective?
Yeah, so
looking forward.
I did a lot of service work in my first 12 months where I would work, basically do freelance work for other people. And I found out I just hated that. like it's really good money. You can, like, that's the quickest way to start a business is do a service, productize service or whatever version of that you want to do. But I found I really enjoy the sales process of it. Like, I like getting business, but stopping working on my business to go work on somebody else's business just was not fun at all. So that resulted in me kind of doing a crappy job for several folks, or not living up to my own expectations. And I didn't like that, so I quit it and started doing coaching, actually. Well, let's see. I guess April I started doing some coaching, and then I was doing service work. And I actually went to Costa Rica last August and wrote myself a note. I said, what if I stopped doing all service work and just focused on coaching for immediate income and then kept on building my platform to launch a course for my long-term thing? So when I got back from Costa Rica, after thinking about that for a week or two on vacation, I decided to do that. So I got rid of all my service work customers, focused on coaching because I really enjoyed that. That was something that was really fun, and did that and spent the rest of the time working on this course and getting it ready to launch. So that would be something. That was a lesson I learned. I'm sure there's plenty of other stuff that I've screwed up on. But one of the bigger ones is just finding out what your version of your business looks like. And that just looks different for everybody. Like, some friends of mine like really like service stuff and they don't want to do product. That's great for them. It's just not for me. So finding out what your business looks like just takes time, and it takes you, you know, doing a bad job, fixing that. Don't leave on a bad note. Make sure you do your stuff. Make sure you get there eventually. Make sure you apologize when you screw up stuff. And, you know, just get better. Forget about it and move on. Make an adjustment and don't let it get to you.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I hear where you're coming from on the service business. I mean, it you know, doing a podcast is kind of like doing a video for someone. There's a lot of artistic interpretation and preferences that go into it. And we're very sensitive to what people like and don't like. And there's a fair amount of subjective things that people come to you with and say, hey, yeah, that wasn't quite right here. This isn't, you know, this and this here. And I enjoy it because I'm kind of a perfectionist. I enjoy podcasting, but I can see having a thing to sell that's kind of fixed. And the more you can sell it, the better. And there's less ongoing sort of maintenance of it. And like you said, a recurring monthly component to it.
That's part of it. I feel like too many people just are lazy and want to get into it that way. Oh, service work's too much work, so I'm going to go do this, and it's way easier. And I think that's a bad way to make decisions, to choose the lazy route. But for me, like, I'd been in sales for 15 years. I knew I could sell. I'd never sold a digital product before, so I didn't know I could do that. And part of it was a challenge. Like, could I do this? Could I follow the paths of these guys like Noah and other folks and do what they did, maybe do it better. And that's that, so some of it was a challenge. And some of it was, I just genuinely just didn't like it. Like, I don't know. So yeah, I think there's several parts of that. Just make sure your reason why you're doing things is good. And it, like, if your reason is that sounds like good money, then like, maybe don't do that. Like find something that actually like, so there's three criteria. One, you enjoy it. Like you generally just like doing it and that'll ebb and flow. So these aren't all, none of these are independent. They all kind of link together. So like you might start out with 10 out of 10 on you like it. And 6 months later, you might be a 5 out of 10 and 6 months later, you might be back to a 10 out of 10. So that's a varying scale. The second thing is, can you make good money from it? And the third thing is, can you genuinely help people with it? So finding the intersection of that can look a lot of different ways. And some of those will ebb and flow as your business grows and all, but I don't know. Just don't make a decision because that's the easy way. And, oh, passive income, and I'm going to sit on a beach. I mean, all that crap's BS. Like, passive income equals 10 years of killing yourself, and then maybe you get there.
Right.
Like, yeah, okay, I made $220,000 in 10 days. Like, man, that was 20-plus years of work. That was 3 months solid of doing nothing but working on a course. That was 18 months solid of doing nothing but building an email list. And that was, you know, 6 months solid of doing a bunch of service work that I didn't really enjoy all that much. And that was 20 years of starting a whole bunch of businesses that failed. So like, yeah, okay, that sounds like a big number. And it is. Like, I'm very grateful for that. That isn't past me at all. But it's a whole lot of work. So I don't know. I think people just are delusional about this stuff sometimes. Like, it's just going to take you a long time to figure stuff out. And maybe you'll be lucky and you'll be really smart and figure stuff out quickly. That would be my hope for you. But it probably isn't the case. Like, it's going to take you years to figure it out. And you just got to be committed to that and be fine with failing and fine with finding your version of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard the saying, 10 years to overnight success recently. And that's what it is, right? You got to put in the time, learn your lessons, you know, earn your stripes, fail a lot probably. And then fail smartly, I guess, like fail by doing things and being as educated as you can about it and learning from guys like you and Noah and Rob Walling and all these guys and trying to do the best job you can. But I think it's nice. I mean, the amount of information that's out there right now about how to do it well has never been better.
Easier than ever. There's roadmaps everywhere.
Yeah. But you know, like you said, every situation is going to be different. I mean, you're not going to ever be able to create a, you know, Rob Walling course, or I'm not going to be able to create a Brian Harris course just because I'm not you and it's already been done and come from different perspectives. So I think, you know, having a template is fine and then go and kind of learn as you go from there.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. So is Cam Newton really Superman or is that just a urban myth?
I don't know. We have to check with him. He just signed a $100 million contract. So I mean, we need to become friends ASAP.
There you go. There you go. I just saw you're an Auburn fan. Are you guys looking pretty good this year?
Yeah, I think it'll be a good year. We got a lot of returning defensive players. Our defense was really bad last year. We got Will Muschamp, who's one of the top defensive coordinators, came over. So that should be good. And good quarterback, up-and-coming quarterback. So, yeah, I think we're maybe in some polls predicted to be in the playoffs. So we'll see. But, yeah, always high expectations.
Nice, nice. I went to Vanderbilt, so I
recently
had our kind of day in the sun, I think, and now we're relegated to the bottom of the SEC again. But
yeah, I think that guy y'all hired, maybe he had a pretty rough time last year.
Not the best choice, I know.
yeah.
We'll see.
They should have done the Clay Travis, back the dump truck up to James Franklin and pay him $10 million a year. That was literally their only chance of having any version of a coach for a period of time.
No, yeah. Yeah, and he had it made. He was going to be the king of the whole school. So it's unfortunate, but
$10 million would have changed his mind. Nothing less, though.
It'd change a lot of people's mind. That's for sure. I'd probably do a pretty good job for $10 million a year.
Like Texas, they wanted Nick Saban last year. Pay him $10 million, he'll come.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Money will convince a lot of people of a lot of things.
That's right.
But
that's
not the end all and be all. So you got to, at the end of the day, like, I think for us, for anybody looking at a class ahead of them, so if you're in the middle class, looking at the upper class, if you're in the lower class, looking at the middle class economically, like, it's always easy to look at them and say, oh, they have a ton of money, they can do whatever they want. Like, it's just really not like that, honestly. Like, one is really hard to jump classes, and two, if you do, you still have the mentality of where you came from. So, like, I just made more money than I made in, like, the last 4 years combined. And, like, I bought a recliner for my wife because she's about to have a baby. Like, we haven't done anything. Like, I don't even know what to do with that. Like, what do you do? Like, I have zero idea. I mean, I have ideas. But like, I'm still incredibly conservative. So, I don't know. Like, it's interesting, like, judging people in different situations and what you would do. And a lot of times it's just really not the case.
I agree with not being able to change your sort of what level or class that you come up in. I mean, we came from middle class and I'm still middle class, and I don't ever think I'll think like the ultra wealthy people I know, just because it annoys me. You know, it annoys me to see some of these people riding around in their Beamers and stuff, and I just want to slap the shit out of them sometimes. It's just, yeah, I don't know. And I feel like a little bit of white trash sometimes when I think like that. And maybe I am, and I don't think so. But there's
a lot of people that have done extremely well for themselves and aren't like that at all. But the ones you see, like I have a buddy who grew up in rural Alabama, as dirt poor as you can be, has wrote 20 plus number one songs over the past 30 years, and is the best dude you will ever meet in your life. And I don't have any idea how much he's worth. A lot, like lots of zeros on the end of it. Same thing with several blogger people I know that have done extremely well, like that have risen from lower class or middle class to upper class and do, you know, multiple seven figures a year, and they're just good folks. And I think the idiots give those folks a bad name, because there are a lot of people that you never know have a lot of money that give like crazy and are just good people. And those are the people I want to be like. Like, if I'm fortunate enough and God blesses me enough to get to that point, I want to be them. Like, I want to give away the vast majority of what I make and help people, not be a douchebag.
Yeah. The noblest of goals right there. Nice.
Hashtag
don't be a douchebag. Yep. Cool, man. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap. You tell folks where they can, reach out to you and learn more about you and hear about your course and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. It's videofruit.com. I always do all these experiments where I try different things. One I just recently ran was ripping the sidebar off my blog and seeing if that helped grow my email list. So on the homepage, there's a experiment kind of showing the results of that. So you can check that out, check out the story. There's some little bonuses you get if you want to, you know, subscribe to the blog or whatever and kind of see some of that behind the scenes stuff. So yeah, just videofruit.com, and I publish a blog post once a week, another marketing experiment. They're always interesting and cool. So come check them out.
Awesome. Brian, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.